At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Camping wasn't new to us. Mike and I had been doing it since college. It was our way of unwinding from the drudgery of 9-to-5s, a time to drink cheap beer, cook over a fire, and bask in the quiet solitude of the wilderness. We knew these woods like the back of our hands, or at least, we thought we did. This trip was supposed to be the same as the others. We picked a spot deep in the woods, far from any campsite, far from the cell towers and Wi-Fi.
"Just the way it should be," Mike had said, grinning as he stuffed gear into his truck.
We were looking forward to a couple of days of silence, nothing but trees and the sound of the river flowing nearby. The first day was perfect. We set up the tent, collected firewood, and cracked open our beers as the sun dipped below the horizon. The air was crisp, and the stillness was calming, broken only by the occasional rustle of leaves or the distant hoot of an owl. But that night, something changed. Something shifted. It was around midnight. Mike and I sat by the fire, trading stories and laughing too loudly, our voices echoing in the empty woods. That's when I heard it. Soft at first, almost imperceptible. A single crunch of leaves just beyond the firelight. I froze mid-sentence, my eyes locked on the black void of trees beyond the campsite.
"What is it?"
Mike asked, his voice dropping. I forced a laugh. "Probably just an animal." But even as I said it, I knew it didn't feel right. The sound wasn't random. It was deliberate, like someone or something was carefully placing each step. My skin prickled, and the fire suddenly felt too small. Its light too fragile. Mike shrugged and went back to his story. I tried to shake it off, but the unease stuck with me, like a weight pressing down on my chest. We eventually crawled into our tent, and Mike was snoring within minutes. But I laid there, staring at the nylon walls, my ears straining for every sound. And then I heard it again, closer this time. A slow, deliberate crunch, as though someone was testing the ground just outside. My breath caught in my throat. I didn't dare move. It wasn't just footsteps. It was careful, intentional. It was hunting. The next morning, I didn't mention the noises to Mike. He was in a really great mood, flipping pancakes on the portable stove and humming a song I didn't recognize. Maybe I was just paranoid. Maybe it was nothing. But the forest felt different. The air was heavier, the usual chatter of birds and insects replaced by an oppressive silence. Even Mike noticed.
"Weird how quiet it is,"
he said, glancing at the treetops.
"Usually these woods are noisy as hell." We spent the day hiking and fishing by the river. It was uneventful, but that feeling of being watched never left me. Every snap of a twig, every rustle in the underbrush made my stomach tighten. I kept glancing over my shoulder, but nothing was there. At least, nothing I could see. When we got back to camp that evening, something was wrong. One of our backpacks had been torn open, its contents scattered across the ground.
"Bear, maybe?"
Mike said, but his voice lacked conviction. There was no claw marks, no bite marks, just the eerie sense that someone had been going through our things.
"Yeah, probably,"
I said, but my stomach churned. The neatness of it was unnerving, like whoever or whatever did it had been looking for something specific. That night, the fire felt less comforting. We sat in silence, both of us pretending we weren't listening for something, pretending that we weren't scared. Around 11, Mike froze mid-sentence, his face going pale.
"Did you hear that?"
he whispered. I nodded. There it was again, slow, deliberate crunching. This time, it was unmistakable. It wasn't an animal foraging or the wind rustling the leaves. It was footsteps, circling just outside the ring of light from the fire.
"Hello?"
Mike called out, his voice cracking.
"Anyone out there?"
The woods swallowed his words. My heart was hammering in my chest. I stared into the darkness, my mind racing. The shadows seemed to shift, like something was moving just out of reach, watching, waiting. "Let's add more wood," I said, my voice shaking. The flames roared back to life, and for a moment, the light pushed the darkness back, but the footsteps didn't stop. That night, I barely slept. Every time I closed my eyes, I heard it. A low, guttural sound, almost like a growl, but not quite. It didn't belong to any animal that I knew. Mike was awake too, his breath shallow and panicked.
"What is it?"
he whispered.
"I don't know,"
I said, though deep down, I was sure it wasn't anything we wanted to meet. By dawn, the noises stopped, but the feeling of being watched lingered. Mike wanted to stay one more night. I wanted to leave. We compromised by packing up most of our gear, but staying close to the truck for our final hike. That's when I saw it, or thought I did. A figure. Too tall and too thin to be human, standing deep in the woods. Its limbs were wrong, too long, and its head tilted unnaturally, as though it was studying me.
"Mike," I said, my voice barely above a whisper. But when I looked back, it was gone.
Our last night was a blur of fear and exhaustion. The noises were constant now, crunching leaves, snapping twigs, and the guttural growl that seemed to come from everywhere at once. At one point, we saw eyes, reflective, unblinking, too high off of the ground to be a deer. Then they disappeared.
"It's close,"
Mike whispered, clutching his flashlight like a weapon.
"It's so close."
We didn't sleep. By dawn, we were packed and gone, not stopping until we had reached the truck. Mike drove in silence, his knuckles white on the steering wheel. Neither of us spoke. We didn't need to. I don't think I'll ever go camping again.
Sometimes, late at night, I swear I still hear it. The slow crunch of leaves, the careful, deliberate steps. Whatever it was, it's still out there. Sometimes, I wonder if it ever stopped following me.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I was born and raised in a house that stood near a forest for almost my whole life. You could imagine, I've heard stories that kept me up at night, multiple nights at a time. My father was brought up in the Algonquin lands in Michigan. The amount of stories he used to tell me are far more than I can count. My mother always scolded him for scaring me.
"For Christ's sakes, Gerald, you'll scare the poor boy out of his wits."
Clearly, he never took anything my mother told him seriously. In a way, I'd almost felt a connection to the forests. I always wondered as a kid what stories those trees might have seen. How many moons, suns, and sunsets have they witnessed? I would sneak out at night to sit in the treehouse that I built without the knowledge of my father, because I knew he would not allow for it to stand. One day, when I overslept in the same treehouse, my father found it while searching for me. To say that he was livid would be an understatement. I asked him why he hated the woods so much.
"When you've seen what I've seen, you'll understand soon enough."
I never understood the meaning behind those words. But now, as I drive my car through the Appalachian Trail, 7 years after my father had died, a part of my heart felt as if I understood the quote my father always said. I had deeply underestimated how tangibly creepy the forest was at night. The clock on my dashboard blinked 12:54 a.m. The faint blue glow was the only comfort for me, other than the headlights of my car. It was pitch black outside. Not even the moonlight seemed kind enough to offer the so little light it could offer. Trees passed in on both sides with their skeletal limbs reaching for the road like claws. My headlights cut through the gloom, illuminating patches of cracked pavement and the occasional road sign coated in grime. The silence was the first thing that unnerved me. Not the peaceful kind of quiet you would expect in the wilderness, punctuated by crickets and rustling leaves. This silence was dense, oppressive, like a blanket smothering the world.
My ears strained for any sound, but the only noise was a low hum of the engine and the occasional crack of a branch under my tires. I adjusted the rearview mirror, glancing behind me out of habit. Nothing but darkness stared back. I swore under my breath for quite some time. I wished my sister had not visited me this afternoon. She had forgotten her breast pump in my place, and given how remote the land her house is situated in, she only had one way, and that was to call me to tell me to come to her home. I had never taken this trail before. My father had taken this trail before. My father had spoken greatly of his heritage, but I had never paid any attention to it all this time. He had also spoken greatly of his experiences in the woods. "Don't think about that," I told myself. "Think about something else." I adjusted my hands to the radio. Nothing. Pure static. I turned the channels, turning the knob aggressively for some form of comfort. Nothing. Static again. A flash of movement on the road ahead. My heart leapt as I slammed on the brakes, the car skidding to a halt with a screech. I swore under my breath.
What the actual?
There, standing in the center of the road, was a deer. At least, I thought it was a deer. It was a buck, tall and gaunt, with antlers that jutted out like twisted branches. Its ribs pressed against its fur, and its legs seemed too long, spindly and fragile, like they might snap under its weight. The headlights cast an eerie shadows across its body, and for a moment, I thought it was just sick, maybe starving. But then it looked at me. Its stare pierced through my body, as if an actual human was staring at me. I gulped. The thousands of legends my father had told me came to a whirlpool into my mind, and the sweat started forming in the creases in the back of my neck. The forest stayed silent, still. Not a movement of a cricket, nor the rustle of a leaf. Not a single breakage of a twig or stick. Its eyes didn't reflect the light like a normal animal's. They absorbed it. They were a black tunnel, I felt, pushing me deeper and deeper into it. I sat frozen, my hands gripping the steering wheel so tightly my knuckles turned white. I was now growing more and more scared. The air conditioner within the car was not enough to mask the sweat and unbounded fear forming within my body. The deer or creature tilted its head slowly, unnaturally, as if trying to understand me. My knuckles were now turning paler than ever. I took one hand off the steering wheel and covered my mouth with it. It did not break eye contact. It just kept staring into my soul. And then it moved. Its legs jerked forward in a halting puppet-like motion, the joints bending in ways they shouldn't. My eyes widened. You don't have to be a nature expert to know deers don't stand up like that. The creature opened its mouth, and a low, guttural clicking sound filled the air. It wasn't a sound any deer should make. Panic, fear, and outright rage surged through me, and I hit the horn. I hit it again and again, the blare echoing through the silence, but the creature didn't flinch. It tilted its head high, almost as if it was toying with me. Its spindly mouth turned into, as I watched in horror, a smile. It took another step forward. "Nope, nope, nope, nope," I muttered, slamming the gear into reverse. But the car wouldn't start. "Shoot, shoot," I yelled and plunged my legs again into the accelerator. The headlights flickered once, twice, and then the road plunged into darkness. When the lights came back on, the road was empty. The deer had vanished.
My heart was pounding, a drumbeat in my chest as I pressed the accelerator and sped forward.
"Just a weird deer," I whispered to myself, though my mind did not agree with me at all.
I shoved those thoughts deeper into the back of my mind. That's all it was, just a sick deer. But the knot in my stomach didn't loosen.
The road stretched on, darker and narrower, the trees closing in like a tunnel. I couldn't shake the feeling that something was watching me. Maybe something was. My hands tightened on the steering wheel as the car hit a pothole, the jolt rattling my teeth. A sharp crack echoed through the night.
Shit!
I swore again, this time not a whisper, but loud. I paused. Now, as the sound of my car had stopped, I noticed just how quiet the forest was. I glanced in the rearview mirror again. For a moment, I thought I saw movement, something pale darting between the trees. The knot in my stomach tightened at this. I shook my head.
"Keep it together," I muttered. "You're just tired."
From fear, my legs now equivalent to lead. But then it happened again. This time, I was sure of it. A shape, pale and long-limbed, slipping through the trees just at the edge of the headlights' reach. The car suddenly felt like a fragile bubble, a thin shield against the encroaching darkness and the ever-approaching dread that was the forest. I pressed the accelerator harder, the engine growing as the car got out of the pothole and finally sped up. I prayed to God to save me. I wished all this would just end as quickly as possible. But no matter how fast I went, the thing in the woods kept pace. I could see it now, flickering in and out of view, darting between trees with unnatural speed. My chest tightened as the road twisted and turned, the headlights sweeping across the wilderness. Every curve revealed more shadows, and every shadow felt alive. Even the branches appeared as if they were watching me. And then the engine sputtered.
"No, no, no,"
I muttered, my voice trembling as I slammed on the gas pedal. The car lurched forward before stalling completely. The headlights dimmed, and the silence returned, heavier than before. I fumbled with the key, twisting it into the ignition. The engine groaned but refused to start. And then I heard it. The clicking sound, that guttural sound that deer or whatever it was had made. It started faint, a rhythmic, bone-chilling noise that grew louder with every passing second. It was coming from the woods, circling the car, closing in. My breath was shallow as I peered out the window, the darkness pressing against the glass. My breath had fogged the window. And then I saw it. The creature stepped into the beam of my dying headlights. My breathing became faster as it walked on its hind legs. Its body contorted and stretched, the thin fur barely clinging to its frame. The antlers jutted out at unnatural angles, and its eyes, those hollow black pits, seemed to pierce through me. It opened its mouth, and the clicking sound turned into a low, guttural growl. My hand shook as I turned the key again, desperate. The engine roared to life, and I slammed the gas pedal. The car jolted forward, the tires spinning on loose gravel before catching traction. The creature lunged, its bony hand slapping against the rear window with a sickening thud.
"Oh my freaking God!"
I swore loudly, but did not stop. I lunged at the accelerator. I didn't look back. I couldn't. My only focus was the road ahead, the beam of the headlights cutting through the oppressive darkness. The clicking sound faded, but the feeling of being watched never left.
I drove like a madman, my heart pounding, my hands slick with sweat. When I finally reached the edge of the forest and the distant glow of my sister's house came into view, I almost cried with relief. I didn't tell my sister what had happened. I couldn't. How could I explain something even I didn't understand? But as I took the breast pump out of the trunk, I noticed something. A scratch, deep and jagged, running the length of my car's rearview window. And in the dirt on the back windshield, scratched with one bony finger, was a single word. Mine. Even now, weeks later, I can't shake the feeling that something followed me out of those woods. At night, I would hear faint clicking sounds outside my window, and the shadows seemed to move when I'm not looking. I made a mental route to myself to never invite my sister over again. But sometimes, I dream of those hollow eyes staring at me from the darkness. And I know it's still out there, waiting.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
I was told to write this out in therapy. They said it was good for the process. I thought maybe sharing it would help it feel like less of a nightmare and more like reality. The woods in South Texas were my home, and my home sounded like the finger picking of an acoustic guitar. As an adult, there's a part of me that misses the constant smell and taste of dirt and grass. As a kid, I never noticed it. There was a lot I didn't notice. How much I didn't mind the tiny thorns as I walked barefoot over roots. As an adult, my steps through nature are much more hesitant, even in shoes. I always knew my way back home as a kid. It felt like the woods knew how to keep me safe. However, I thought that was because of the angel in them. My mother told me that everyone had an angel looking out for them. Angels would be there in our most challenging moments. She was smart enough, though, to tell a six-year-old like me at the time that I should rely on them for everything. God gave us common sense for a reason, so we better get used to it when we can, was one thing she liked to say a lot, especially when we did something stupid. I say we because during this time, I was just an only child. It wasn't until a year later I got a sister. Before I got my sister, I got a dog. Before my dad would leave for work during the summer, he got me a blonde Jack Russell Terrier to keep me company. I named him Charlie. Today I look back and like to think that Charlie was my angel. I was always happier at the end of the summer. The air would get cooler, rain would come and make the woods pretty with shiny mud and puddles. My birthday was at the end of August, and my dad would be back for a few weeks. A week before my birthday, Dad would be here. I remember my mother getting off the phone that morning, sending me out to play. Go on, get out of the house for the morning, and you could come back and play with your games when your dad is here. Dad's coming back?
I asked. That's right. Sally at the Motel 6 said he stopped last night. Probably didn't want to wake us up so late.
She told me.
Now go play with Charlie. He'll honk his horn for you like he always does when he gets here.
I dressed myself, tied my shoes, and went off the porch with Charlie into our woods. They were never scary to me. We never had any predators since there was a fence my dad built marking our property line. I had never been in the woods at night, though. Today, I made it my mission to try and teach Charlie how to fetch. Trying to get him to chase a stick was easy. I just didn't know how to get him to bring it back or even pick it up. It was when the stick I was throwing led to all of this. I wanted it to go far. I wanted to see how fast Charlie could go. I wound my whole body to launch it like I was Hercules. The stick whipped through the air, crashing against a tree where it landed and disturbed a sleeping rabbit. That little critter only felt a small fraction of my might and knew to start running. Unfortunately, it now had the interests of my loyal hound. Charlie took off after it, faster than I ever saw him move.
Charlie!
I yelled out before I started to keep up. He was much faster than me. He had twice as many legs. My own two could barely keep up as I tripped over a tree root. Raising my hands, hoping to stop myself, but I was going so fast I went into another tree. Tree bark hooked into my cheeks and tore away small patches of skin. It stung a lot, but I was too out of breath to register the pain. Then I heard Charlie barking. He rarely barks. I picked myself up and started to run again, hopping off on foot and onto another as my chest burned. I followed the barks until I reached our fence. Charlie's barks were over and beyond our territory. I had to cross into enemy lines. The fence wasn't that hard to climb. However, it was hard to climb down. I let myself drop into sticks and grass, where I said my first swear word to myself.
Shit!
It slipped out as I looked at my hands. Charlie's barks reminded me of my mission. I rose to my feet, cautiously looking around. In the distance, I saw a small structure. I made my way over to Charlie, standing by it, just barking.
Charlie!
I yelled at him before running up and hugging him. He looked at me and then looked over at the shed he had been barking at, letting out little whimpers.
What is it?
I asked him. But I knew better than to expect to finally reveal he was maybe a talking dog. I put him down and just said, "Stay." For the first time, he listened. I slowly approached the door of the shed, pressing my ear against it and listening. It looked new. It was made of metal, too. There was a bike lock on it. I could open the door, and I was able to do so just enough that I could squeeze through. Before doing so, I looked back at Charlie. Let me know if you see any bad guys. I poked my head through first. The only light was what was creaking through the door. It smelt old, almost kind of sour, like when Charlie peed on the couch. There wasn't much inside except for her. The light that landed on her body made her look as if her skin was made of marble. Her hair was a fiery gold that draped down her back and over her shoulders. She was blindfolded, and her hands were bound to a bar attached to the shed by chains. On her back were her wings. They were black and pressed flat against her skin like a drawing. She wasn't wearing anything except for a crown that was made of sticks and thorns. She was very pretty, though. Pretty like my mom, except different parts of her face had dried blood. I couldn't tell if she was sleeping because of the blindfold, so I got closer and pressed my hand to her shoulder. A few gentle nudges and she started moving around. Her head rose but swayed off balance as she tried to keep it up. Her mouth opened, but words I didn't understand started to come out with more drops of blood. They almost sounded like words I knew, but they were just wrong.
Miss,
I said softly. Looking at her, she was pretty, had wings, and spoke oddly.
Are you an angel?
Her head began to sway up and down very slowly.
Do you need help? My mom said angels help us.
She also told me that they don't speak to us like how we speak to each other. Her head kept swaying up and down, her face entering the light. I didn't know that angels could bleed. I looked at the chains.
I think my dad has something to cut those. I'm gonna go look. I promise I'll be right back.
I raced home with all sorts of questions floating through my head. Mostly about angels. Why didn't they wear clothing? Do they eat, sleep? How did they see with blindfolds? Mom always said that God gave them everything that they needed, but it seemed that they needed help this time. Maybe Charlie was an angel sent by God to lead me to her. Once I got over the fence, I just had to run from it and home would be in sight soon. Even though my home was small, it was easy to spot. It was built on stilts and painted blue. I could tell I was coming from behind as I couldn't see the porch. Charlie kept up with me, but as we got up the steps, he hopped on a chair and waited for me as I went inside. My mom called out my name as I went to the underside of the sink.
What are you doing, sweetie?
She said, the stench of cigarettes entering the room before she did.
I'm looking for the chain scissors,
I said as if it was a real term. I could feel her confused stare before correcting me.
You mean bolt cutters? What the hell for?
She then got closer and noticed my battle wounds.
Oh, Jesus. Hun, your face. Get out from under there. Go sit at the table.
She grabbed me by the arm and lifted me up. I knew better than to fight back, but I still argued.
But Mama, there's an angel behind the fence and...
Before I could finish, she cut me off with anger.
Boy, do you know what's behind that fence? Charlie was chasing a rabbit and went back there.
That doesn't mean that you do, she said. If you weren't already scratched up and your dad wasn't coming back, I'd whoop you. I kept quiet. She got out the first aid kit. I held the cigarette as she put the medicine and bandage on my face. Once she finished, I heard a horn. Once she was done, we heard the horn. I hopped off the table and ran out the door. Charlie was barking excitedly behind me. Dad stepped out of the truck, preparing himself for my assault of a hug. I embraced myself into him, taking in the scent of smoke, diesel, and dirt. His bare claw of a hand brushed through my hair.
Hey, little man. Let me get a look at you.
He spoke and sounded like a cowboy. He managed to pry me out of the hug to see my face. His gaze of awe quickly hardened into one of concern. However, he didn't do so for me. His eyes locked in on Mom.
What the hell you doing to my boy?
He said in a stern but polite tone.
I didn't do anything to your boy but put a bandage on him. How about you ask him?
Mom said with a bit of attitude. Dad looked back at me.
Sounds like you got a story to tell me, he said, taking a seat on the steps of the semi, pulling me up on his knee.
I was teaching Charlie how to fetch, and we spooked a rabbit, and then Charlie went off chasing it, and I had to rescue Charlie, and we went over the fence, and I couldn't leave him, so I rescued him, and then we found the angel. Your son scraped himself going over the fence.
My mom interrupted.
I heard that, Marlene. I also heard you say to let him tell it.
My mom was about to say something again before my dad cut her off.
Don't interrupt my boy again. Now go on. Tell me more about this angel.
She needs help, so I came back to get bolt cutters to rescue her, I said.
That's mighty brave of you.
She's real, Daddy. She has wings on her back and hair like the sun,
I tried to explain. His eyes widened a bit, probably because I interrupted him, but I wanted to save her.
I believe you, boy.
He looked at my mother, who definitely didn't believe me, or was too mad about the fence. If she's really an angel, she can wait. I'll go save her myself.
Joe,
Mom said, but quickly cut off.
After I spend some time with you all first. I miss you guys so much.
He picked me up and sent me flying. The sensation of being lifted to the house was like a dream. Dad knew all the secrets to turning me into a superhero. He set me down and told me to get a movie going while he talked to Mom. She came up the porch and Dad rushed me inside, closing the door. I could still hear. I didn't like to listen when they were by themselves, nor do I like them without me. They didn't seem as happy when I wasn't in the room. Even at so young, I understood how much I kept them together. I almost forgot about the angel for most of the afternoon. We ended up watching The Last Crusade since I got the DVD set for Indiana Jones last Christmas. We finished the evening with the game of Yahtzee, my mom's favorite. My dad took me to bed and my angel nightlight gave me the reminder but also an idea.
Dad, you should take Charlie with you.
What?
He said, standing in the doorway as he was about to leave.
He knows where the angel is,
I explained.
I see. Don't worry, I haven't forgotten. Get some rest, son.
We told each other goodnight, and I love you. I had some trouble sleeping. I wasn't sure if Dad really believed me until it was late. I couldn't smell my mom's cigarettes anymore. They usually meant she was asleep. I heard noises in the kitchen and the front door. Even if it was real quiet, this house was too small to hide anything. It must have been Dad going to help the angel. I heard him whistle past my window, calling Charlie. I used his brief waning whistle as a lullaby. I wish I could remember the dream. I like to think it was about the angel. My dreams didn't understand that they were supposed to appear in my sleep. My alarm clock that morning was nothing being expressed through the verbal abuse I heard. I don't remember much of what was said. Nothing came clear until I opened the door and tones got quieter.
Just start making some damn pancakes, my dad said.
I stepped into the hall, passing the little living room into the tiny dining space.
Well, have a seat there, little man. Mama's making pancakes.
The room was silent. It was missing something. I looked over at the open door to a quiet screen door. Usually, when I'm up, Charlie is right there with his paw on the glass looking in.
Mom, where's Charlie?
I asked. I couldn't see her, but as soon as I turned, I heard the metal clink of a Zippo.
Ask your father,
she said softly. I turned my head to him. He looked really tired. I didn't have to speak, and neither did he. However, he went ahead and lied, and I went ahead believing it.
He's with the angel, he began. I went to go save her, and she offered to take Charlie with her back to heaven to get him some wings.
It took me years to learn his lies to me were also spoken slowly and clearly, as if he was checking his own false facts.
You're going to get a flying dog soon, he said with excitement, and it made me giggle.
Okay,
was all I could say with a smile. We ate breakfast and I learned what soon meant. Soon wasn't the next day. It wasn't the next month or Christmas. Soon didn't come next year or in any future birthdays. Soon came 20 years later for me to see Charlie and the angel again. I did go back to that shed a few days later. Maybe she didn't know where I lived. However, it was empty. No proof that she was there. All I found from that memory was the bike lock used to keep the door closed, tossed aside by a tree. It was open, and the digits were my birthday.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds, or Skims. Sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
When I was 7, I didn't have any real friends. I didn't need any. I was happy enough playing with the monsters who lived in the forest in our backyard. I don't remember exactly when or how I met them. I don't remember their names either. I just remember them consisting of 3 big furry monsters. One of them had what appeared to be a crocodile snout with a pig nose. Another looked like a gorilla with bull horns. The third resembled a lion with gigantic fangs that extended past his chin. I remember about the day I first met them. They insisted that we played hide and seek together, and that I would be it. We did just that, and I had a lot more fun than I had expected. Every day, I would go to the forest to play with my new friends. We never played the same game twice in a row. I remember us playing Tag, I Spy, and a whole bunch of others. I told my parents about my friends, and they seemed to be perfectly fine with me hanging out with them, just as long as I was back before sundown. I remember my friends having a home in the form of a small cabin with only one room. The furniture consisted of a single table and 4 chairs where we would sit and eat snacks. There were also 2 closets, one on each side of the room, but I never paid much attention to those. I remember one day my parents announced that we were moving. I told them that I didn't want to leave my forest monster friends behind, but they promised I would make more friends at our new place. Right before moving day, I went to the forest to find my friends. As soon as I found them, I told them that my family would be moving to a new house. They seemed to be very saddened by this and begged me not to leave them. I told them that I didn't want to leave either, but it was my parents' decision, not mine. After we moved, I eventually made some real friends and forgot about all my old friends in the forest. As I got older, my parents constantly told me that I had a vivid imagination as a child and that I had a whole bunch of imaginary friends I played with in the woods, but the details of these friends were extremely foggy. 15 years later, I went to visit the neighborhood I was born in. I recognized my childhood home, which was now abandoned, so I decided to go check it out. I went into the backyard and recognized the deer trail leading into the woods. I followed the path until I arrived at the very similar-looking cabin. I knocked on the door, and it fell off its rusty hinges. I peeked into one room and saw a familiar cobweb-covered table and 4 warped chairs. I walked over to one of the closets and opened it. Inside, hanging on hooks, were 3 monster masks and 3 matching furry suits that looked like they hadn't been worn in years. As soon as I saw those masks, memories began flooding back, and I instantly remembered my friends from my childhood. All along, they had been people in costumes. I then walked over to the second closet and opened that one. What I saw inside nearly made me vomit. Laying against the closet wall were a bunch of skeletons. Child skeletons. each about the same size as I would have been when I was 7. My friends were monsters, all right. Just not the kind I thought they were. I first saw it when I was 8 years old. It was late in the afternoon, and I was playing in the woods behind my grandmother's house. She lived in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by sprawling forests, and I hated every minute of my summer visits. She was a kind old lady, but always distant. Whenever I lazed around the house, she'd tell me, "Go outside and play." One cool day, I wandered farther than usual into the woods. I was throwing rocks at a bird when a rabbit darted past my view. I chased it, watching it dart and weave through the trees. The deeper I went, the quieter it got. The air felt heavy, so heavy it sat in my chest. The rabbit juked sharply and ran across a clearing, and that's when I saw it. It stood in the middle of the clearing, blackened and gnarled, like it had been struck by lightning but refused to fall. The bark was split and cracked, with strange knots that looked almost like faces if you stared too long. The branches twisted outward, like skeletal fingers clawing at the sky. A tree. I froze, unsure of why it scared me. It was just a tree. But something about it felt off.
"Greg!"
My grandmother's voice called out, startling me.
"Come inside, it's getting dark!"
She had a trumpet for a voice, and I whipped my head around so fast it almost came off. I ran home. Just before I left the clearing, I turned to get one last look at the tree. It must have been a trick of the light, or maybe I was looking in the wrong place, but it was gone. I didn't tell anyone about it. What was I supposed to say? That a tree disappeared? Even as a kid, I knew how crazy that sounded. But after that day, I kept seeing it. Sometimes it was in the woods, sometimes in the fields, sometimes along the side of the road when my parents drove me home. It was never close, never in the same spot, but always the same tree. Blackened, twisted, and impossible to forget. By the time I turned 12, I convinced myself it was a reoccurring dream, a trick of my mind. The sighting stopped as I got older. I'm 36 now, married, stable job, decent life. My wife Ellen says I overthink everything, and she's probably right. That's why I didn't tell her about the tree when it showed up again. I was walking to my car after work, the late shift at the hardware store. The parking lot was empty except for the streetlights buzzing overhead. I left my lunchbox on the car's roof and opened the door. As I reached for it, I saw it, standing at the edge of the lot, partially obscured by shadows. My heart stopped. It looked exactly the same as it had 20 years ago. Twisted, charred, watching. I blinked and rubbed my eyes, and it was gone. For weeks, I told myself it wasn't real. Work stress, lack of sleep. There had to be an explanation. But the appearances became more frequent. Not every day, not every week, but enough to leave me on edge. Sometimes at the distance, other times much closer. One day I saw it outside the window of a cafe where Ellen and I were having breakfast. "What's wrong?" she asked, noticing the way I froze mid-bite. "Nothing," I lied, forcing a smile. But it wasn't nothing. It followed me through the years. It was there on the day Ellen and I moved into our first house, standing at the edge of the yard as I unloaded boxes. It was there the night our son Sam was born. I spotted it in the hotel parking lot when I went outside for air. It was there at my father's funeral, a dark silhouette against the gray sky. I tried ignoring it, pretending it didn't exist. But the more I ignored it, the closer it seemed to get. One night, I broke down and told Ellen about it. "It's a tree," I said, pacing the living room. "I don't know how to explain it, but it's been following me my whole life." She stared at me for a long moment before sighing. "Greg, you've been under a lot of stress. Maybe you should talk to someone." "I'm not crazy," I snapped, louder than I meant to. "I didn't say you were," she said softly, her eyes full of concern. But I could tell she didn't believe me. I slept on the couch that night. One evening, I called my friend Sean to grab a few drinks. He was my oldest friend, the kind of guy who could make you laugh even when everything felt like it was falling apart.
"Greg," he said, slurring slightly after a few too many. "You've been weird tonight. What's going on?"
I debated whether to tell him, but the liquor loosened my tongue. "There's this tree," I began. "I know it sounds insane, but it's been following me ever since I was a kid."
Sean laughed. "A tree? What, like it's stalking you?"
"I'm serious, Sean. I see it everywhere. It's real."
"All right, show me," he said, waving a hand.
"It only appears sometimes, man. You don't understand." Sean laughed again, but when we turned the corner, we saw it standing under a streetlight. Sean stopped laughing.
"What the hell?"
"Do you see it?" I asked, my voice shaking.
"Yeah," he said slowly, taking a step forward. "That's creepy."
"Don't go near it," I warned. But he didn't listen. He walked up to the tree, reaching out to touch its bark. As soon as his hand made contact, the air seemed to shift, the branches creaked, and Sean stumbled back, clutching his chest.
"Sean!" I shouted, rushing to him.
He didn't respond. He collapsed to the ground, eyes wide open, staring at nothing. I looked up at the tree. It hadn't moved, but I swear I felt it watching me. I moved my family across the country after that. I wanted to believe I could escape it, leave it behind. But it followed me. It always followed me. Years passed. Sam grew up, went to college. Ellen and I got older, slower. But every time I saw the tree, I felt like that kid in the clearing again. By the time I was in my 60s, it had stopped hiding. It stood outside my window every night, a silent reminder that it would never leave me. One cold autumn evening, I couldn't take it anymore. I walked outside and stood in front of it. The wind was still, the air sharp in my lungs.
"What do you want?" I whispered.
The branches creaked, but the tree didn't answer. I reached out, my hand trembling as I touched the bark. It was cold and rough, like stone. For a moment, nothing happened. Then a wave of memories flooded my mind. Every moment I had seen the tree, every time I tried to forget it. And something else too. A presence, ancient and vast. It wasn't threatening. It wasn't kind. It simply was. It had been with me my whole life, not as a threat, but as a witness. A silent, unyielding shadow tied to me in a way I couldn't explain. When I pulled my hand away, I felt an odd sense of peace. The tree didn't move, didn't follow me back inside. It just stood there as it always had, watching, waiting. And for the first time, I let it.